Get ready to be catapulted from Earth into space. It's Andrew Rennie and The Space Show.
Whee, it's off into space we go. And thank you, Sandra. Well, as Sandra said, we're going to rocket off, and this time we're rocketing to the moon, and we're going to have Tony Perkins to introduce our show tonight.
Soon, I hope it's soon, that lucky day when they fly rockets to the moon. I'm sure that sooner or later they're gonna reach outer space. And if I gaze in a crater, I may see my own true love's face. I hope it's soon, it's got to be. If there is life on Mars, there may be hope for me. You don't really care, but I have no doubt there's somebody out there singing a different tune. So if I can't get you, I'll take a rocket to the moon. It's a certainty that sooner or later they're gonna reach outer space. And if I gaze deep down in a crater, I may see my own, my true love's face. It better be soon, it's gotta be. If there is any life at all on Mars, there may be hope for me. You don't really care, but I have no doubt there's somebody out there singing a different tune. So if I can't get you, I hope that I get to her soon. La da da da. So if I can't get you, I'll take a rocket to the moon. 4, 3, 2, 1.
And Tony Perkins was right. Sometime they did get rockets to the moon, and that happened 50 years ago. And on this evening's Space Show, we remember Apollo 12, the second human landing on the moon. 50 years ago on Monday, just gone, the three-person crew returned to Earth. Apollo 12, that's our topic this evening. And let's get in the mood again with a trip to the moon. And this is by Jimmy Heidrich, who comes from Memphis in the United States of America. The first trip to the moon by humans was Apollo 8, three people there, and they circled the moon 10 times at Christmas of 1968. That was followed by Apollo 10 in May of 1969, and again they went into lunar orbit. They tested the lunar module but did not land. And then Apollo 11 in July of 1969, and they were the first people to land on the moon. And then came November of 1969 and Apollo 12. It was launched, I'm going to give times in Australian Eastern Standard, launched on November the 15th. And they went to the moon. Two of them landed on the moon, and then they came back to Earth, and they splashed down on November the 25th at 6:56 a.m. That's Australian Eastern Standard Time, which by our calendar is last Monday. They did two extravehicular activities of 3 hours and 56 minutes and 3 hours and 49 minutes. They were on the moon for 31 hours and 31 minutes. The Command and Service Module made 45 orbits of the moon in 88 hours and 56 minutes, and the total mission time was 244 hours, 36 minutes and 25 seconds. Yes, they did time it down to the second. The crew was Commander Charles Conrad, generally known as Pete. Lunar module pilot was Alan Bean, and those two were the ones who landed on the moon. And the command module pilot, Dick Gordon, officially Richard Gordon, he orbited the moon in the Yankee Clipper and did not land on the moon. The lunar module was called Intrepid. Now, we have here a feature which we began playing last week, a documentary about this, a radio documentary prepared in 1970, just after that moon mission, and we'll go into part two of that now.
Soon they were locked in the moon's embrace, and Conrad and Bean prepared to be the third and fourth men on the moon. The command module was Yankee Clipper. The lunar module was Intrepid, and soon they were separated, and it was time for the second descent to the moon's surface.
300 feet coming down at 5.
That crater right where it's supposed to be.
You're beautiful.
10%. 257 feet coming down at 5. 240 coming down at 5. Hey, you're really maneuvering around.
Yeah.
Come on down, please.
Okay.
10% fuel. 200 feet, coming down at 3. You can come on down,
okay?
190 feet. Come on down, 180 feet. 9%, you're looking good.
Much had been learned from Armstrong's near-critical landing, and the LEM computer seemed to be functioning properly.
Get some dust before long. 130 feet, 124 feet, Pete. 20 feet coming down at 6. You got 9%. 8%, you're looking okay. 96 feet coming down at 6. Slow down the descent rate.
The landing computer had been programmed to find a specific set of craters not far from the landing site of Surveyor 3, which had traveled to the moon almost 3 years earlier.
80 feet coming down at 4. You're looking good. 70 feet. Looking real good. 63 feet. 60 feet coming down at 3. 50 feet coming down. Watch for the dust. 46.
Low level.
42 feet coming down at 3. Coming down at 2. Okay. Start the clock. 42 feet coming down at 2. 40 coming down at 2. Looking good. Watch the left. 31. 32. 30 feet. Coming down at 2 feet. You got plenty of gas. Plenty of gas, dude.
Even with the guidance computer working properly, fuel was low and being used rapidly. Conrad took over at the last minute, switching the LEM to manual control. He would need all his combined years of experience as a pilot and intensive NASA training to pull this off.
Stay in there.
30 seconds.
18 feet coming down at 2. He's got it made. Come on in there. 24 feet. Contact light.
Roger. Copy contact.
They landed with 23 seconds of fuel left. Though it was a picture-perfect landing, it actually left them with less fuel than Apollo 11 had at touchdown. On the previous flight, the gauge had read erroneously, When Houston thought Apollo 11 had only about 30 seconds of fuel left, it actually had almost a minute and a half left to hover. Apollo 12 was right on target. The crew was characteristically overjoyed.
Holy crap, it's beautiful out here. It sure is. It's something else. Hello, man, Houston, I'll tell you, I think we're in a place that's a lot dustier than Neil's. The good thing we had a simulator, because that was a high FR landing.
Roger, Pete.
I was high, Al. I know it.
Their high was infectious. Mission control was awash in good cheer. A few hours later, Conrad and Bean suited up. It was time to leave the LEM and venture onto the moon. Gone were the first landing fears, and gone was the somber nature of that history-making flight. Only one flight later, the explorers were up to their helmets in wisecracking fun.
Down to the pit. Man, that may have been a small one for Neil, but that's a long one for me.
That may have been a small one for Neil, but it sure was a long one for me, Conrad said.
I'm going to step off the pit, Mark.
When he placed his boot onto the moon, Conrad sounded like a child stepping into a hot bath.
Off the moon, is that soft and clean? Hey, that's neat.
He then guided Al Bean down the ladder. Bean was also giddy with excitement.
Wait. You ready now? No. Let me come. Gonna run through this crater. Let me come. Now, wait a minute. Lem, egress, 5, 6. It's 15.
Unlike Apollo 11, this flight had a high-resolution color TV camera. The view of the two astronauts climbing down the ladder was spectacular. Just minutes later, Al Bean took the camera in hand to provide Houston with a 360-degree view of the lunar landscape. It was to be their last.
That's a get your knees down, attaboy. Okay, good shape. Good shape. Careful, the hatch closed here. Okay. And if I'd have landed 20 feet behind where I landed, we'd have landed right smack in that crater.
Al, we haven't seen any change at all. Why don't you go ahead and take and put your glove in front of the lens, but not over it, to see whether we can get any change at all.
What do you see now?
It's still the same, Al. We've got a very bright part, about 20% of the top, and black in the bottom. Stand by, Al.
Pointing in a non-bright area. Let me point it. Got pointed away from the sun here. Maybe ground trouble. Connections look good.
Al, we see no change at all in the scene. Why don't you just give it a little tap and maybe the color wheel will turn up.
And we're looking at Apollo 12. Yes, second human landing on the moon. Now, mention was made in that documentary about Surveyor 3. Now, Surveyors were a series of craft that were designed to find out whether people could land on the moon successfully and not sink into it and to find out what the conditions were like so that they could design the lunar module properly. So in 1967 April, Surveyor 3 was launched towards the moon, and here is a report that I recorded way back in 1967 from the Voice of America off shortwave radio describing Surveyor 3.
America's Surveyor 3 spacecraft lowered a metal stubble onto the moon's surface today, penetrating about the length of a finger into the soil. Photographs of the action showed a slight furrow on the moon's surface when the shovel was retracted. Earlier reports said extensive photographs of the operation were postponed until the lunar night, when the television camera will have cooled off. This is the first time man has started such an elaborate experiment on the moon. Further experiments call for the digging of a small trench. The shovel is said to be capable of picking up a fist-sized rock. The spacecraft has transmitted more than 1,400 pictures of the moon's landscape since it landed Wednesday.
And here is another report about Surveyor 3.
America's Surveyor 3 has completed part of its spectacular job on the surface of the moon.
Watched by television cameras, which are sending pictures back to Earth, a device on the surveyor has cracked a shallow furrow in the surface of the moon. Close-up pictures of the foot-long furrow reveal that the moon...
Sorry, that wasn't actually from the ABC Radio Australia. Back to our documentary on Apollo 12, and we now talk about the loss of the television.
Chagrined, Bean accepted that he had burned out the camera. No amount of pounding or regret was going to bring it back. The networks were shocked. What were they supposed to do now? Without TV downlink, they improvised madly. CBS was best equipped, with two men in Apollo suits shown walking around the lunar surface simulator at the Grumman plant in New York. It was a convincing simulation. ABC was next, as panicked news producers searched in vain for Apollo moon suits. It seemed that CBS had beat them to the punch. In an act of desperation, they dug up some old space suits from a canceled TV show. They would have to do. Soon, two actors were prancing in front of a lunar backdrop, fumbling around with mock-ups of the Apollo instrument packages. But NBC was arguably the loser. Obviously, they had prepared for just such an eventuality, but whoever decided that six-inch marionettes in spacesuits would look convincing scampering in a sandbox was sorely mistaken. With all the seriousness appropriate of a moon mission, the puppeteers tried their best. It was a hilarious show. The rest of their exploration was invisible to mission control. Nonetheless, tasks complete. It was soon time for the two men to return to the LEM, to rest, and prepare for the second EVA.
This is Apollo Control at 128 hours, 51 minutes. We're still about 1 hour from the scheduled end of the sleep period. However, the flight surgeon reports some indications in the biomedical data that the crew may be beginning to stir. So we'll be standing by live for any calls from the spacecraft.
Well, you said Intrepid. How are you this morning?
Morning, Intrepid. How did you sleep?
Good, but sweet. We're hustling right now. And we're going to eat breakfast, have a little talk with you, and get about our business.
Sounds good.
Their second surface exploration was to last almost 4 hours. They hopped out of the LEM and immediately began to gather rock specimens. One of these was used for an activity they called rock bowling, a test of lunar gravity.
How about a grapefruit-sized rock? That's what I'm holding in my hand. And these other rocks that I was talking to you about are pretty well buried and they're pretty large. I don't think I could get one of them going. Houston?
Roger, we copy grapefruit size or any size is fine.
Okay, Al, are you standing still?
I'll stand still, go ahead.
Okay, I'm standing still. Houston, on my mark,
I'm gonna roll it.
Mark, it's starting down. Hip, 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 hip. Now it's just rolling. Roll, roll, roll. Still rolling.
Roger, Pete, we've got some jiggles that I can see here. We'll get a reading on it for you.
Still rolling. Still rolling. Very slowly, still rolling. And it stopped. Mark, stop.
Soon it was time to begin their hike to Surveyor 3. This unmanned craft had been sitting on the moon almost 3 years. It had been instrumental in determining that a manned lunar module could land safely. Now, just such a module had landed nearby, and its inhabitants were making their way to the surveyor to ascertain what the years on the moon would do to a machine. When they arrived, the probe seemed none the worse for wear.
Beautiful, beautiful sight. You know, this was brown, and I don't remember ever seeing brown there at the Cape. Kind of a light tan, or maybe that's the way it changed color.
It was badly discolored. Bean asked Houston what color it was supposed to be.
What color was this one? Houston, white? What started out?
Stand by on that.
Yeah, it looks a light tan now. Yeah, this crater isn't as steep as we thought, Pete. I better be careful. I'm going to get dust on it. Yeah. Yeah, I'll stop hearing this people laugh.
Well, the equipment bays were white on the side, and the scoop itself was a light blue.
Well, it's kind of a... Well, we'll get down there and get close inspection. What was the general color of all the structures? For example, all the struts and the lights.
That's all white. The equipment bays and the primary structure was all painted with a white paint.
Conrad fielded a set of snippers, and they chopped off various limbs, including the surveyor camera and sampling scoop, to return to Earth for examination.
Good cut. Good one, Pete. Okay, two more tubes on that TV camera and that baby's eyes. Guys, that's crazy. She got it.
Beautiful.
Turn around. Let me lay it on you, man. Let's get the scoop while we're at it. I ain't gonna hold that thing with one hand and open the bag. Get in there. Get in that bag.
Then, it was time to bound off and collect more samples on the way back to the LEM.
Yeah, Houston, kind of interesting here. Pete walked across one edge of the rim here, and we're about, 50 feet inside the upper rim, and he happened to scrape an area there with his foot into a much lighter colored soil, like cement.
As the two ebullient astronauts cavorted on the moon, Dick Gordon had his hands full in orbit. As he waited for them to return, he had a full schedule of photography to do. He was taking hundreds of pictures of future landing sites, including an area called Fra Mauro, the planned site for Apollo 13. Little did he know what awaited the next expedition. Soon, Conrad and Bean had used up all their time and were ordered back inside the LEM. Reluctantly, they complied.
All right, Houston, Mark, I'm on the footpad.
Mark?
You did a little more. Okay, you got it.
I'm in. No sweat.
Okay, now, careful when you turn around, yeah?
Yeah,
good.
It was then that they noticed how dirty their suits had become.
Okay, boy, you look dirty. No, you do too. Hey, what's your room? I'll get you that. Okay, it says, just need water closed. We did that. Well, we had to close and lock.
Yeah.
When you're out of the way, I'll slide over and lock my
out of the way.
Gotcha.
It might turn around.
Okay?
Okay.
Get all my hands and knees and lock your foot.
Yeah.
Get it pushed down. Hey, just a second. Let me raise my side. There's like shit going on in here. Well, just back up and let me tilt further forward. This is good.
Once inside, closing the LEM's hatch became a chore.
Hey, let me close it. Okay, see if you can reach it. Just a little bit out of that reach, you might be able to get it. Okay? Easy. I'm ready. Can you get back in quick? Hatch closed. You get it?
Yep.
Good show.
A few hours later, it was time to leave. The countdown proceeded to zero.
Looking good, Pete.
Yeah.
10, copy ignition, guidance looks good.
Looking good. 316 feet above the lunar surface.
Boy, good day, right? Boy, it's a mile, I don't know what. 5:30
1,594 feet above the lunar
surface. That's pretty good. We're on our way. And in 1 minute, it's all right, 20 feet. Okay.
And off they went.
Coming up on 1 minute.
This program looks good.
Intrepid Houston, looking good at 1 minute.
Skipper Houston, your goal for pyro arm and stand by to receive the skipper's gig.
Okay, do you want to let me finish this roll, huh?
Do you what?
Okay, finish this 180-degree roll, okay?
I don't understand what he's saying now. Do you understand?
No.
Intrepid Houston, he's going to finish his roll maneuver now.
I'm working on it.
All right. That's a trip.
Aye, aye, sir.
It was a textbook ascent and rendezvous. As they approached the command module, they were able to see the scorch marks from the lightning strike at launch.
Okay, program what? Look at the umbilical cover. Do you suppose that's where it got hit by lightning or something?
Was it burned?
Look at the top of it, burned.
Yep, I do believe that's what got hit. Why don't you move over to the left a little bit, and I'll take a picture of it and take a look at it later.
Head drop down?
Down.
Yep.
Now you see me?
Okay, go. I got you.
Okay.
Once docked, Dick Gordon got angry with the pair in the LEM. He didn't want a bunch of smelly moon dust fouling up his command module. So, in what Conrad later referred to as the first space streak, the two got naked and floated into the command module. By the time they cut the ascent module loose, Conrad had only advanced to wearing a headset. Eventually, Conrad agreed to get dressed.
Babe, that was a hell of a show. Bad TV didn't work. He said, you'll never believe what we've been doing for the last 35 minutes.
Then they made the critical engine burn on the far side of the moon and began the trip home.
One of the popular songs of that time was called Destination Moon. It's a fanciful invitation by a lover to go off to the moon on a supersonic honeymoon. Of course, there's no speed of sound in space, so supersonic doesn't mean anything. Anyway, this version of it is sung by Kevin Kayers, who's a baritone, Gordon Horison, a bass, Dick Prestholt, a lead singer, and Neil Siegel, the tenor. Destination Moon.
There once was a time when the colorful thing to do was to call for a girl on a bicycle built for two. But cars and trains and even planes all have had their day. Now the time is due to call for you. In the modern atomic way, come and take a trip in my rocket ship. We'll have a lovely afternoon. Kiss the world goodbye and away we fly. Destination Moon, travel fast as light till we're lost from sight. The Earth is like a toy balloon. What a thrill you get riding on a jet. Destination Moon, we'll go up, 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 straight to the moon, we two. High in the starry blue, I'll be out of this world with you. So away we steal in a space mobile, a supersonic honeymoon. Leave your cares below, pull the switch, let's go. Destination Moon. We'll go up, 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 to the moon we two, and for heaven in the starry blue. I'll be out of this world with you, so away we steal in a space mobile, a supersonic honeymoon. Leave your cares below, pull the switch, let's go. Destination Moon, Destination Moon.
Hope we get there soon.
We can go at night.
It will still be bright from reflected light.
The most romantic satellite. Fly me to that romantic satellite.
Destination Moon. And I have a dozen more versions of that, but we'll spare you from them tonight.
From Sandringham to South Yarra, you're listening to Southern FM.
Where you're listening to The Space Show. Our topic this evening is Apollo 12. And we return now to our Apollo 12 documentary.
We have acquisition signals.
Apollo 12, Houston.
Oh, Houston, Apollo 12, approved home.
Very good.
Apollo 12, Houston, we're ready for TV. Anytime you want to send some down to us.
Okay, we're trying to get into a good position right now. The time I want is a little bit later, but we're at least at the moon so fast we got a better ticket.
Pete Conrad's rock bowling was the talk of the day.
Hey, listen, while we're getting that, since you're the international expert on lunar rock rolling, how does that work? Tell us what a rock looks like when it rolls down a lunar crater, since you did some of that on Earth.
Well, it goes very slowly. And I guess the impression you have, the same way as if you throw something up there, and we had occasion to throw some things away, they sort of move out, not too rapidly, but they just keep going. And that's exactly what happens when you roll a rock down the side of a crater. Once you can get, it was hard to get them going. I was surprised. I think everybody had the idea up there that because you're in such light gravity, that things would roll down rather easily. And that really wasn't the case. Once you got it going, it just sort of went along in animated slow motion, but it kept going for a long, long time.
Do they bounce, or do they dig in, and do they go through the down to the bottom?
They bounce and slide a little bit of everything, just like they do on Earth, but just stretch it out. I found that I couldn't walk. Wherever we went, we loped. And it just didn't seem natural not to lope. But when you lope, it reminds me of these pictures, high-speed motion pictures of watching a giraffe run or something like that. That's just a feeling I had as I loped across, because I'd have to step out and then just sort of hold what I had until I came down. And that's the way Al and I moved around on the whole traverse.
Even their spacesuits got a review.
So the funny thing about moving around on the lunar surface, you put on this pressurized suit we wear, and you try to do it on Earth with even close to the weight you have on your back on the moon, and you get tired very rapidly from the walk. And you don't have to walk, you know, over, let's say, 200-300 yards, and you're ready for a rest. But on the moon, in the light gravity, with the same suit on and the same weight, your legs never seem to get tired. When you run up the side of a steep slope, you can do it, but just running around on level ground, you seem to assume some sort of a normal pace, and you're able to go for long distances without your legs getting tired. The suit doesn't always want to bend like you want to bend. For example, it bends pretty well at the knee, and it bends pretty well at the ankle, but it doesn't want to bend up near the thigh, the top of the thigh. So what happens? You tend to run with straight legs, land flat-footed, and then push off on your toes. And you think to yourself, well, I'm going to tire out my calves pretty soon because I'm not used to this sort of thing. But apparently, the force it takes to push off on your toe on the moon is much less than you just have when you walk or run on Earth. So your legs just don't seem to tire. You can move around rather easily, don't you think, Steve? Yeah, I'd like to ask the doctors if I have any idea, but I'm sure that our heart rate stayed fairly low even while we were loping. I don't think we approached anywhere near the heart rates that we had in just our normal walkthroughs and practices in 1G back on Earth.
Soon, Apollo 12 splashed down with some 75 pounds of rocks and another 15 pounds of surveyor souvenirs and three very happy astronauts.
Al Bean reports three main chutes have deployed.
Blast out. Flag. Mark. 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 Green chute.
We record splash at ground elapsed time of 244 hours, 36 minutes, 24 seconds.
Once down in the South Pacific, they received a phone call from the president.
Tremendously proud. you know, before you took off, we talked on the phone that night, and I invited you and your wives to come to the White House for dinner. And I just want to be sure you can make that date.
Yes, sir. We'll be there.
Fine. Well, we'll expect to see you after you get out of quarantine. And now there's one other thing I think I should tell you, that I noticed that you've been responsible for several firsts. You weren't the first on the moon, but you were the, I think, Commander Conrad, you were the first to sing from the moon, right? And,
yes, sir.
That's right. And it was the also, we had the first moon quake as a result of your flight and the first press conference from outer space. Now, after all of those firsts, I think that the nation wants some recognition, and I've been trying to think of what would be the best way to recognize you. And over these past 10 days, I noticed that Walter Cronkite and the other commentators are always referring to you as Commander Conrad, Commander Gordon, and Commander Bean. And I, exercising my prerogative as Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces, have decided that you should be promoted, and that from this day forth, you shall be Captain Conrad and Captain Gordon and Captain Bean. Congratulations.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you very
much. Thank
you, sir. We look forward to seeing you.
Yes, sir. We're looking forward to being here. Thank you very much, sir.
So there we have it, from 50 years ago this month. Many artists got into the moon craze with lots and lots of songs, and Canadian Tommy Danton was no exception, and here's his version of Rocket to the Moon.
Countdown! We're gonna rock it to the moon, we're gonna rock it to the moon. If you wanna join the baby, it's gonna be green. We're gonna rock it to the moon. We've had the big bopper and the chipmunks too. The world is kinda crazy, so we leave it all to you. We're gonna rock it to the moon, we're gonna rock it to the moon. If you wanna join the baby, it's gonna be green. We're gonna rock it to the moon. The itchy twitchy feeling kinda gives me a fright. The radio is blaring out day and night. We're gonna rock it to the moon, zoom, zoom. We're gonna rock it to the moon, zoom, zoom. If you want to be gone, we're gonna rock it to the moon, zoom, zoom. Rock it, rock it, rock it, rock it, rock it, rock it to the moon tonight.
After the moon mission, the astronauts went on to various lives. Alan Bean became a painter. And here's just a little clip of Len Halperin, a member of the Space Association, talking about that with Stan Anderson, who helped track the Apollo spacecraft through the Araya aircraft. So here we go with Stan Anderson and Len Halperin.
It's a philosophy I heard from Alan Bean.
Apollo 12 lunar module. Number 4 man on the moon.
Yeah, lunar module. He had a saying that says, because I saw him in one of his interviews afterwards, And he said, if you have a song in your heart, you have to sing it because nobody else knows the words. And
that's
and I thought that
it's
was
not
so
bad for
profound.
A podium astronaut, but it's,
yeah, no, no. Well, Alan Bean is a very talented painter.
Artistic. Yeah.
Oh, incredible!
When he came back from the moon, he became a painter. He spent the rest of his life painting.
Yeah.
What he did, he got all his old gear that he was allowed to keep from the moon, and he noticed that it had dust on it. So he figured that's the moon. So what he did, he ground it and mixed it into all his paints. So all of his paintings have a bit of the moon in them.
That's cool.
That's
yeah.
Cool, isn't it? Anyways,
that's a little bit
so,
cool.
Until he ran out.
Now, many historians have documented the Apollo missions. Eric Jones is one of them. He's the editor of the Apollo Lunar Surface Journal, and he lives in Wodonga, right here in Victoria. And he spoke with Peter Aylward of the Space Association to explain the Apollo 11 and Apollo 12 television coverage of the moonwalk and how the TV camera burnt out.
When Al Bean unfortunately pointed the TV camera at the sun and we lost the TV, I was banished to the toilet with my portable radio because my dear wife did not want to hear Pete and Al going dum-de-dum-de-dum-dum across the lunar surface, but I wasn't going to miss it.
And did you manage to get to see any launches at all or anything, any of the activities from Mission Control or any of that sort of thing during that time?
Yeah, I was, by the time of Apollo 16, I was working at Los Alamos, and I was on a committee of people. I was the Los Alamos representative on a committee of people involved in radar systems. And one of the other members was thoughtful enough to organize a meeting in Florida a couple of days after the 16 launch. So I was out on the causeway with all the other hundreds of thousands of people watching the launch. I spent entirely too much time looking at the launch through a viewfinder. I will never do that again. Watch it, idiot. There were hippies and there were people from the Midwest in their camper vans, and everybody was having a wonderful time, caught up in the whole thing. I remember standing there on the beach. I'd been watching this girl in a floral print dress, but then things got critical, and I was concentrating on the launch, screaming "Go, go, go!" and as everybody was.
So I've often wondered, because, I mean, just about everyone that was there had cameras, and some people had video, audio recorders, I guess. How did your pictures turn out, and do you still have them? Or are they not many people seem to have been able to find them or share them. It's fascinating to see sort of candid amateur-type photography from of that period.
Yeah, no, I don't have them. NASA released pictures that were infinitely better of them, better than anything that I could take. No.
So, well, that's been The Space Show, and I'm Andrew Rennie.